comes from the Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 1. In the NIV, headed the genealogy of Jesus. A record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac the father of Jacob. Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Perez the father of Hezron. Hezron the father of Ram. Ram the father of Amminadab. Amminadab the father of Nashon. Nashon the father of Salmon. Salmon the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of King David. David was the father of Solomon, whose mother had been Uriah's wife. Solomon the father of Rehoboam. Rehoboam the father of Abijah. Abijah the father of Asa. Asa the father of Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat the father of Jehoram. Jehoram the father of Uzziah. Uzziah the father of Jotham. Jotham the father of Ahaz. Ahaz the father of Hezekiah. Hezekiah the father of Manasseh. Manasseh the father of Amon. Amon the father of Josiah. And Josiah the father of Jeconiah and his brothers at the time of the exile to Babylon. After the exile... I'm finished yet. only two-thirds through. After the exile to Babylon, Jeconiah was the father of Shealtiel. Shealtiel the father of Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel the father of Abiud. Abiud the father of Eliakim. Eliakim the father of Azor. Azor the father of Zadok. Zadok the father of Achim. Achim the father of Eliud. Eliud the father of Eleazar. Eleazar the father of Mathan. Mathan the father of Jacob. And Jacob the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called Christ. Thus there were 14 generations in all, from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the exile to Babylon, and 14 from the exile to the Christ. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I'll take it now. No, that's still switched on.
Thank you. Okay. Brilliant. Well, you've no doubt worked out why I got Jeremy to do the reading. He volunteered. He did volunteer, and he did say he'd practice beforehand as well. So that's fantastic. But you might be thinking, well, what on earth is Keith going to talk on? Because we can see some words in there that Keith is undoubtedly going to try and avoid. Because you know, speaking anything that's got a difficult word in it, it's going to be difficult for me, isn't it? I get all confused and tongue-tied. You might also be thinking, well, it's just a list of names, a rather boring, let's be honest, list of names that doesn't make a great deal of sense. Let's get on to the good stuff, Keith, the Christmas stuff. Let's get on to the story of Jesus being born. Yet this is an important part of Jesus' story. So important that Matthew devotes the first section of his gospel account to writing down all these names in the line of Jesus. And yet, as we look at it, I think the message from God to us is, you have a place in God's plans. Not you as in, I'm a Christian, I go to church, but you as in a named individual are on the list that God has when he thinks about his plan. So think of your name today. Mine's Keith. If you've got the name Keith, you can think of that too, but you might want to use your own name. Jeremy or Shirley or Andrew or whatever. And imagine God having his plan and unrolling it, and your name is in God's plan. And that is the key thing that I want to get across to us this morning. Your name is written down in God's plan. Now, it's up to you if you want to be part of that plan. I'd suggest to you that in a church like ours, actually you've got real opportunities to investigate, to explore, and to find out what your place is in God's plan. Dorothea mentioned some things coming up at Christmas. We've got a church meeting this week. They all involve us sort of stepping out from the routine and saying, well, God, what is your plan for the life you've entrusted into my care? We've also thought this morning about our start of Advent, the season of waiting as we again remember or get ready to remember God's rescue plan when he sent Jesus into the world. And all of this got me thinking, actually, rather bizarrely, I must say, of a trip to Bognor. How many of you have ever been to Bognor? One or two of you? It was a long time ago when I first went on my own first time to Bognor. It was when we'd just arrived. And we don't really do seaside resorts in Scotland. Not the way you do them down here. We have seaside resorts, but the weather just isn't really up for it. Never has been. But you really do seaside resorts in a big way on the south coast. And Bognor's the kind of place that looks like it's been permanently waiting for better days. Permanently in an Advent season. Now, Bognor was just plain old Bognor, of course, until 1929, when King George V, yeah, that would make more sense, chose to recover from illness there. His extended royal visit caused the town council to look for an opportunity, and so they approached the king's private secretary, Lord Stamford, to request that the title Regis be added to the town name. Well, what the king said in response should not be repeated here. But the Lord Stamford went back to the petitioners and told them, the king has been graciously pleased to grant your request. Well, it was midwinter when I first saw Bognor Regis, as it now is. And the bog bit of Bognor was undoubtedly in ascendancy. It was lost in grey clouds and drizzle. It didn't look terribly wonderful, it had to be seen. The beach, and this is the thing that I found puzzling on the south coast. Most of the beaches on the south coast are just gravel, really. Stones, not very comfortable stuff. Seaweed and gravel, and a chilly fog. The shops promised better days. They suggested that at some point you could buy ice creams or candy floss and hot donuts. At this point, they were all boarded up, so there wasn't a lot going on. I walked to the pier, because again, this is something we don't really have up north in Scotland, because the weather not being so good. A pier that once jutted out into the English Channel. A pier, according to the guidebooks, that had once been a centre of entertainment and it had a theatre. And yet, on that day, all that was left were really some rusting remains. Time, storms and neglect had not been very kind to poor old Bognor. There's something to be said about the seaside on a cold winter's day. A sense that the fine days of summer have gone and everything is just waiting for those good days to return, waiting for better days. I wonder if we, as we begin Advent, if that's perhaps how we would describe our faith in many respects. We're waiting for better days. The days of summer have rolled away, those easy days when faith was rather straightforward and we could make a lot of progress. Storms have battered your faith, different trials and difficulties have come along. And now what remains is sitting in the cold, simply waiting for better days. I've called this thought The Big Rescue, but I've also called next week's talk The Big Rescue. So I thought maybe we'll change the title today to Waiting for Better Days. Because this is the story this morning of how God planned to rescue a waiting, desperate people. In many respects, their faith was a bit like that poor old town of Bognor. It was lost in the midst and grey days of a spiritual winter. They were waiting for better days. Advent is a period of waiting. The name Advent can mean the waiting for the arrival of a notable person or thing. If you've ever tried to see a notable person, then you'll know that the more notable the person, the bigger the crowds and the difficulty of getting to see that person. If you want to catch a glimpse of a famous celebrity, say for instance, or famous footballer, as we've done a few times, haven't we, unnamed Andrew there, then you know you have to get there early to bag your place beside the red carpet or whatever. And then once you've got your place, you have to wait. And wait. And probably wait some more. Because one of the perks of being a famous celebrity or famous footballer is you can decide when you come out. Advent describes waiting. And for some of us, that wait till Christmas isn't nearly long enough. Can it really be 26 days to Boxing Day? 24 days to Christmas Eve. For others of us, it's just too long. Can it still be 24 days until Christmas Eve? That's just such a long time to wait. Advent calendars are one of the ways we can count down the days to Christmas. Sadly, we haven't got one that counts down to Boxing Day, but there's a demand there, I'm sure, from many ministers of all denominations. I spotted online Fortnum's Feasting Advent Calendar, which is retailing for £200. Fillery and Bush Advent Calendar, £349. But the one I'm hoping to pick up this afternoon from Anne and the family is the Scotch Whiskey Advent Calendar. I don't like Scotch whiskey, or any whiskey, to be honest. £10,000 for 24 30-milliliter Scotch whiskies. Now, I don't know anything really about Scotch whiskey, but I'm suggesting that's a little bit on the pricey side. It's a period of waiting, isn't it? It's also a period of preparation. As we get ready to recall the past nativity, the birth of Jesus, and the future second coming of Christ. Waiting indeed for better days. Matthew begins his account of the story of Jesus with this family record of Jesus. In Matthew, we have the family record that leads from Abraham to Joseph, the husband of Mary. What do you think about the past? Maybe you're like me, you like history, and so some bits of the past are really quite interesting, other bits are maybe less so, or maybe you're just like, history, it's so old stuff, not very interesting whatsoever. What do you think about your past? Sometimes history can push us forward, other times it can hold us back. Sometimes things that we've done in our historic past seem to continually come back to haunt us and chain us down. Sometimes events that others have done to us also hold us back. History is a funny thing. We're supposed to learn from it, yet all too often it seems to hold us down in the same position. Sometimes we appear to live as though we're a faded English seaside resort. Like Bognor, we're sitting stuck in the past. No idea if we'll ever get to better days. The family record of Jesus, I would suggest this morning, shows us that the past need not hold us back, but nor does it need to be forgotten or thrown away. For the past is a place where we can see where God was encountered and where God has done amazing things. I'm going to just pick out three people this morning. I tried to pick them because I could pronounce them, but also because their amazing story is included in Jesus' story. I picked out Tamar, Rahab, and David. And as we encounter each of them, we'll see that in many respects, where we as outsiders can only see mess and sin, God can see our place. Let's have a little look at Tamar, first of all. Verse 3, Judah, the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Tamar, where we can only see a mess, God sees our place in his plan. Let's just recap a little bit here. Judah was one of Jacob's sons. Jacob, also known as Israel. His brother was indeed the famous Joseph with that colored coat, whom Judah had just helped sell into slavery. In Genesis 38, back there in Genesis, we read the story about Judah and Tamar. Judah got a wife for his son who was called Er. Remember, you think the Bible, particularly the Old Testament, is a bit dull and boring. You've only got to look into some of it and think, who would call their son Er? And then you realize that actually there's many dads who have nearly called their children Er. So, Mr. Wilson, what's the name for your new son? Er. Yeah, you can see where that one went. Okay, I found it amusing. Er married Tamar, which wasn't so amusing because Er was wicked in the Lord's sight, so the Lord put him to death. Nowhere, no more. Judah then asked someone else to take Tamar, to take care of her, as was the practice. So Onan was picked. We skip quickly along, and in verse 10, what Onan did was wicked in the Lord's sight, so the Lord put him to death also. So by this stage, Tamar's getting a bit of a reputation for not being too good with her husband, shall we say. So Judah is somewhat reluctant to give Shelah, his youngest, to him and insists she must wait. Genesis 38, we read on, Judah became a widower, and after a while he planned to go to Timnath to shear his sheep. Tamar got hold of this plan and came up with a cunning plan of her own. Disguised as a prostitute, yep, seriously, she slept with Judah and became pregnant with twins. If you think the Bible's all about pristine people getting it right all the time, then Genesis 38 at least helps us get a bit of reality check on that. This is a big old mess, and it's just about to get considerably worse. Because the sort of behavior Tamar has done is not approved of in Israelite society, and the sentence is a death sentence. Until Tamar reveals who she is. Not only is her life reprieved, but she gains a place in the royal line that leads to Jesus. Genesis 38, we can only see a mess here. We look at it and we go, how on earth did that get so messy as that? We see sin and mess, but God sees our place in his plan. Here's the thing, Tamar had not earned the right to be included in God's plans. This is no great story of a wonderful, righteous person. Instead, God looked for Tamar. Grace is like that. That's the whole story of Jesus coming to earth, is it? Not we go looking for God, but God comes looking for us. Unearned, undeserved. Grace sees beyond the sin and mess. You and I can mess things up badly, but God can still include us in his plans. Let's move back to Matthew 1, verse 5. It says, Salmon, that sounds a bit fishy, the father of Boaz, they're not going to get any better than not to Christmas, they're only going to get worse, whose mother was Rahab. Well, to read about Rahab, we have to go to Joshua chapter 2. The Israelites are about to enter the land that God has promised to them. The only thing standing in their way is that the country is currently inhabited by other people who are going to have something to say about the fact that the Israelites want to force them out of what has become their home. So you can see that the Israelites face an almighty battle to get what God has promised them. That is a whole sermon in its own right, isn't it? Just because God's promised you doesn't mean to say you're not going to have to battle or fight for it. Well, Joshua comes up with a cunning plan. Two spies will go and spy out the land. It goes with the job description. They stay at the home of Rahab, who we're told quite bluntly that Rahab the prostitute. Rahab protects the men and gains herself a place in the royal lineage that will lead to Jesus. We see sin, Rahab the prostitute, but God sees a plan. Again, a reminder for us that God's grace is like that. Even when we think we can't be much use to God, even when we think our life or our choices have all gone the wrong direction, God can still use us. If we'll let him. Let's move down to verse 6, and we got Jesse, who was the father of King David. Finally, we got one that seems to go right, don't we? King David, probably the greatest king ever. King David, the giant slayer. King David, the worshipper of God. Many of his words still today form part of our worship songs. King David, who is described in Acts 13:22, as the man after God's own heart. The writer of so many of the Psalms. The father of Solomon, whose mother had been Uriah's wife. Nobody is sparing any blushes here, to say the least. There can be two sides to a person's life sometime. There's this amazing side to King David, whom what we remember and who still inspires us to worship today. And then there's the other side, the king who stayed home from battle. Now, I don't know if you know much about kings, but they don't stay home from battle. They should never stay home from battle. They're to lead their people. David, the man who got another man's wife pregnant and then had that man murdered to cover up his sin. that King David. The King David who really messed things up. But when confronted with sin by God through the prophet, David repented. And David too gained a place in the line that would lead to Jesus. We can look at our mess, but God looks at our place. And where we see sin and failure, God sees a plan. So that just when we think it's all over, God knows it's only just beginning. Now, don't get it wrong this morning. Am I saying this morning that you have to be really bad to be included in God's plans? No, that's not what I'm saying. You'll be relieved or disappointed to hear, depending on which side you're on. We've all sinned. But sin need not stop us from being on God's plans. God looked for people he could use. And when God was looking for people he could use, he looked for ordinary, messed up people. People who, when they died, Hebrews says, as we looked at a few weeks ago, were still waiting for what was to come. Maybe many of them didn't realize at the time just what a key role they had in God's rescue plan. Well, what about us? We have to take this from history to our story today, don't we? Are you ready, as we begin Advent, to kind of rule yourself out of God's plans? You think, well, you know, just life's too busy. There's too much going on just to keep the head above water. So, you know, how could I possibly be part of a bigger plan, least of all one drawn up by God himself? And maybe you think, well, actually, I'm one of those characters this morning. I haven't done exactly what they've done, but I've done stuff, nonetheless, that makes me unrespectable, not worthy of any place. Some of us have been waiting perhaps too long, we think. We think we've messed things up. And yet the story of Christmas, the story that begins this Advent, is a story of God's rescue plan, a rescue plan where no one need be excluded. Jesus, we're told, came to save all who were lost and in sin. His family line tells us this as well. No one was too bad. In the midst of the mess and the pain of a broken world, God chose to send his son. That's what Jeremy hinted at when we talk about God coming to earth. We're talking about God coming into the mess, sending his kingly royal son right into the thick of it. No blushes spared, no excuses given. And in John 3:17, we read, "For God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. Whoever believes in him is not condemned." The inclusiveness of God's love is shocking to us today, and many of us as Christians struggle with it. We can't imagine how that person could possibly be included in God's plan, yet they are. But they're not forced in, they were invited in. And whoever believes is not condemned. This Advent, we need not exclude ourselves from God's plans, but nor need we exclude other people. That's why we send an open invite out to some of these activities. We're not just doing them because they're fun, though I actually think the arrival of the animals could be good fun. We're doing them because it's an invite to be part of God's rescue plan. When you take up some of those postcards which are out there, we know they can't deliver themselves. So you're going to have to help us. But you do so with a prayer that that card will round on the right doorstep on the right person's hand at the right time. We believe God's put us into this place and this community for a reason. We're part of God's plan. We may feel small. We feel that we're falling apart, or at best we're sticking ourselves together with sticky tape. But God can see us with grace and mercy and knows we're part of his plan. You may feel that coming up to Christmas, you're just too busy for church meetings, too busy to even consider how you could come into God's plan. Well, this Advent, God sends you that challenge. You're invited to be part of his plan. You're not forced, but you're invited. No one is too bad for God. God has a plan. God has a rescue plan. What's your part? What's your place? Shall we pray? And then I'm going to hand back to the music team and then Jeremy as well. And we say, Lord Jesus, you know, we are a bunch of Christians here in a church, and we're so often guilty of pointing the finger or making our judgments about who's in and who's out. And yet this genealogy of Matthew's written down here, the genealogy of Jesus, shows us that you include some some incredibly broken lives. And if you'd include them, you'll include us too. And if you include us, that invite goes out to others as well. Thank you, Lord Jesus, for those you want to be in your plan, ordinary broken lives, in what you can heal and make into amazing things. Thank you for this period of waiting, this period of preparation. Help us to see your part, the part we can play in your plans today, Lord. Continue to speak, we ask. Amen.